The Startup to Scale Up Game Plan is brought to you by Alpina Search, Europe's premier talent search firm, dedicated to helping technology startups and scale-ups recruit high-impact executives. Now over to your host, Gary Riemann.
A warm welcome to another insightful episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan. Today, I'll be interviewing Guy Rubin, CEO and founder of Ebster, the revenue intelligence platform for Salesforce and HubSpot customers. Ebster helps high-performing biz dev teams engage with more target accounts, helps sales teams close deals faster, and helps customer success teams retain happier customers. And away from Ebster, Guy is married with two children, loves skiing, and he's a passionate Tottenham Hotspur fan. So congratulations, guys. This morning, Spurs are sitting pretty at the top of the Premier League and playing beautiful football at long last.
Thank you very much. Yes, I'm very happy to be a Spurs fan at the moment. That's not something I get to say very often. My son was actually a mascot at the infamous Spurs-Liverpool game. So that was a fun day out. And the stars aligned for my son to have a positive experience on the day that he was a mascot. So all's well that ends well.
Yeah, that was a pretty extraordinary match, not without its controversy. So away from football and mascots and controversy, could you share a little bit about the story of Ebster? So you launched the business initially focusing on CRM, and a few months later, Ebster was the most popular app on the Salesforce App Exchange. You can see I do my research. But after a couple of pivots, you're now positioned as a revenue intelligence platform. So what inspired you to start the company, and what's driven those pivots?
It's a funny journey. When we started in life, my business partner and I come from the recruitment technology space. So we were running businesses in that market for about a decade. And we were always passionate about the data. And so when we stepped into the Salesforce ecosystem, we decided to address a very specific problem, a gap in the market, which was integrating originally emails and calendars with Salesforce. And it turns out everybody who uses Salesforce also uses email and calendar. And so very quickly, our freemium app became very popular. I think we had 50,000 downloads in 2.5 years, or 50,000 companies installed the app into their org in 2.5 years. So solving the problem of making sure all the activity was logged in the system of record was kind of where we started. And very quickly, it became apparent that there was a lot of activity taking place with individuals involved in a sales cycle that actually weren't registered as contacts inside Salesforce. So we extended the functionality out to not just syncing emails and calendars, but also extracting contact details and creating contact records for the people that people were having meetings with or exchanging emails with. So we went from email sync to email, calendar, and contact sync for Salesforce. And that's really kind of where the business started from. We now call that product Ebster's relationship intelligence product, because what we do is try and score the strength of every relationship the business has and make sure that all the activity in those relationships find their way into the CRM. So the reps aren't responsible for logging their own activity or creating contacts themselves. That's kind of where we started. What became apparent when we were doing this for 50,000 different businesses, looking at the activity and the relationships going on every deal that they were working on, was that the opportunities that had the most activity, the opportunities that were the most multi-threaded, were the ones that led to deals closing one. So, who'd have thought it? But in B2B sales, at least, relationships really do drive revenue. That kind of light bulb moment took us on a journey into what we now call revenue intelligence. But we started this journey into revenue intelligence very much from a data perspective. What started off as relationship intelligence, we started to capture more and more data points. From some of that data points exist in the CRM, things like deal progression or deal methodologies and or qualification methodologies, for example. But there's also a whole host of data points and signals that influence revenue that never make it into the CRM. For example, your marketing stack will tell you not just who's ICP, but which of those companies are actually in market. Where's the high intent? You might have product engagement technology telling you about people doing free trials or what buttons they're pushing in the free trial. So these are data points that influence revenue as well. And then all the way through to understanding how multi-threaded we are, how strong the relationships are within particular opportunities or individual accounts, and also other signals that you might have from your phone systems. You know, we're all familiar with call recording technology these days. And there's a wealth of data points being held away in these call recordings and understanding the patterns behind those when people start to mention certain competitors or particular concerns or objections. What influence do those objections or concerns or competitors being raised actually influence revenue? So we started to capture more and more data points. So I think we now connect to over 50 different data points for our customers. And then we built out kind of what everyone considers as part of revenue intelligence. So pipeline insights and forecasting technology, again, either inside HubSpot or inside Salesforce. And that took us on this journey to try and really understand, help our customers build these predictable revenue engines, help them understand. And so we now live in a world where when we onboard a customer, we deliver them this fantastic insight report. It gives us clarity around all of the data points that have influenced revenue for the last four quarters. And so every customer gets this report. It helps them understand all the way down to the individual contributor level, what people's conversion rates are, the time they take in each individual stage, where they're particularly strong, where they're particularly weak and need training. And really, we've gone on this journey to help businesses understand and benchmark where they are, understand the DNA of what a good deal looks like, and then use that benchmark to identify risk in the live pipeline so that people can have a much more collaborative experience when they're doing their one-to-one reviews, when they're trying to submit their forecast, and helping businesses get more and more accurate. So within 3 months, every customer gets within 5% of their forecast accuracy. And that's kind of the journey we've gone on. More recently, we've taken this data from, well, we've got just over 400 customers now using our platform. More recently, we partnered with Pavilion to generate what we call our insight report, where we've analyzed over 3.2 million opportunities, representing over $37 billion worth of pipeline, and really trying to educate the market that all of these signals exist around the business, and you really should be leaning into becoming a lot more data-driven in the way you operate your sales team. And if you do, good things happen. We start to see reduction in slippage. We start to see win rates increase. When you start to become a lot more scientific about the way you analyze the pipeline, the way you push for next steps, and help you understand how to build this scalable, data-driven revenue engine.
Now, I want to dig into these pivots. So you previously used the phrase with me, more pivots than hot dinners, and I was waiting for the chance to sneak that into the conversation. What have you learned from those pivots? Any regrets? Any major learnings?
Oh, so many learnings. I suppose if we were to do it all over again, we'd probably spend a little bit more time with the planning phase, really trying to work out what we were going to become. Because I think over the years, we thought we were here to solve problem X. And then you get into problem X and you realize it's part of a bigger problem. I think there's a lot of businesses out there that suffer or a lot of technology providers out there that think they've got a product, but actually they're selling a feature. And I think if all you've got is a feature, it's very easy for competitors to include you in what they do. So for example, at the moment, we saw an explosion in call recording technology. The likes of Gong are probably the market leader in that space. And when the pandemic hit, it was a perfect storm and everyone adopted these amazing technologies that record your calls and give you insights as to how you should do things better. But actually what we're finding is with the growth of OpenAI and the explosion of AI coming into sales tech, suddenly this massive competitor advantage that the likes of Gong had in the market have disappeared because AI is now available to all of us. So now all of a sudden, call intelligence is just a key component. It's a very important component, but it's a feature in the wider market of what we call revenue intelligence. It's a really important data point, and I'd encourage, you know, if you're not already using call recording tech, you should be, but it should be a key component in the bigger picture around everything that is revenue intelligence rather than a standalone product on its own. So I think, you know, in hindsight, we probably would have done a bit more thinking up front. We probably would have done a little bit more planning and forethought as to what we wanted to become instead of this journey that we've been on where we've kind of learned as we go and evolve and develop the products as we move forward.
You made a couple of references to AI. How are you using AI in your own products, in your own technology stack?
Within EBSTA, we have four data points. So we deliver our customers what we call a propensity score. So that consolidates all the disparate data points you've got in your marketing stack, and it'll tell you the how in market the target prospect is. So as they spend more time on your website or download your content or come to your webinars, all of these things influence the intent score or the propensity score. We then have a deal score. So when we've analyzed, let's say, the last 12 months worth of deals that have closed, won, and lost, we start to see patterns around what good looks like at each stage of every sales cycle. So that might be about how multi-threaded they are or what data points are raised in the or recordings and so on. And all of these things distill down to a single data point around what we call our deal score. And it helps you to understand where the risk factors are. And then we have an account health score for the customer success team to understand the health of that account. And that can be influenced by not just things like your QBRs with the customers, but also things like how often they're using your product or service or how well engaged they are with the product that you're providing. And then, of course, all of this is based around our relationship score, which is the cornerstone of EBSTA. So our platform is all about our relationship intelligence platform helps to understand which relationships are trending up and which ones are trending down. And it may be okay that a relationship is trending down, but if it's not, then you can start to set up gates and triggers to re-engage. But to come back specifically to your question around how are we using AI, until about 9 months ago, we would just plug into whichever call recording technology you were using and use that and analyze those signals to see the influence they've had on revenue. Over the last 9 months, we developed our own call AI product. And like all of the others, it delivers you a transcript and then a summary of the call, and you get key moments that matter so you can dive into, you know, the 30 seconds where pricing was raised or a particular competitor was mentioned. But what differentiates our call recording from others, we've been known for a long time as a technology provider that's very pro deal methodologies or qualification methodology tools. And whether you're using Medic or MedPick or Band or Spiced, it doesn't really matter which methodology you implement. But if you're not capturing qualification data before you leave discovery, then the chances are that the reps aren't doing enough discovery. And therefore, that can catch you out later on when it turns out that maybe we didn't really know who the economic buyer was or what the buying process looks like and so on. So we've had an app within EBSTA for a while that sits like a widget inside HubSpot or inside the Salesforce opportunity record that captures MedPick or Band or whatever you're using. What we've done more recently is used AI to take from the call recording activity and pre-populate the MedPick automatically. So the reps now don't have to do anything at all to see if their opportunity has been qualified well enough to lead discovery. And if it has, they get a green sign. And if it doesn't, they get a red one and they have to go and qualify the opportunity slightly further. So it takes away the admin burden from the reps, allows them to focus on building the relationships with the right people. It builds in the right behaviors because you're getting indicators that you haven't qualified this opportunity well enough because of X or Y, and you need to go back and make sure you do that. And what's really interesting is salespeople want to win. And so they only get a few red signals, you know, two or three times before they start to understand what they need to do better so that they can get a green signal, move out of discovery, and move on to the rest of the sales cycle. So for us, that's been our biggest breakthrough around the way we're using AI. But we've been using machine learning for the last decade to build out these engagement scores and these deal scores.
Have you ever been tempted to introduce a consultancy offering as well? Because the kind of insights that your platform generates must be a potentially strong consulting revenue stream for someone. So have you discussed that? Have you explored that as an opportunity as well?
Yeah. And when we started in life, when we left our old business and before we became our new company, we did a bit of consulting. And I think it's probably fair to say that it's not where our strengths lie. We're certainly product people. But I absolutely agree with you. I think we're seeing an explosion in what we call RevOps consultancy or growth consultancy in the market. So the old traditional SIs even are starting to move into this growth consultancy area. Rather than delivering consultancy services as well, we partner with growth consultants or RevOps agencies or SIs. And they use our data points to help show the customer or educate the customer as to what they need to do next. These consultants are building up these programs of work all around growth and RevOps and revenue intelligence. And I mentioned to you before that when we onboard a customer, the first thing we do is deliver an insight report on how the customer's been pacing across their entire revenue engine for the last four quarters. The growth consultants love these insight reports because they're able to benchmark the customer where they are. And then when we deliver the report again 3 months later, they can show the customer the influence they've had on the whole revenue engine. So whether they've improved win rates, reduced slippage, improved time to close, all of these things they were able to quantify and show the leadership team of a customer. You had a benchmark of where you were. We highlighted the problems that you had. You brought in expert advisors to actually help you address these concerns and drive the adoption of a MedPIC or reduce slippage or improve win rates. And look at the influence they've had over 3 months. And look, here's the next three projects they should be working on. Because like the gym, I think RevOps is one of those, it's not a one and done thing. I think you have to constantly look at small incremental improvements that can have exponential results.
Yeah, good advice, and good to hear you've decided to focus on what you're really good at rather than getting pulled in every direction. Now, I know that in the summer you published the results of your latest survey on the signals that drive revenue. Some of those results are a bit of an eye-opener. For example, more than 70% of reps are missing their targets. So what are the key signals you've identified and what do businesses need to do to improve their revenue performance?
Yeah, some of the numbers are really shocking. I think only 27% of AEs hit their target for the first two quarters of the year. Really shocking numbers. And we've been doing these reports for nearly 4 years now, and we've never seen the numbers as low. Let me talk about some of the positives, okay? So we're seeing more opportunities being created than last year. Last year was a really tough year. The numbers were really quite harsh, but we have seen the first half of this year that the number of opportunities being created is higher materially higher than last year. What we're finding is the deviation between the top performers and everybody else is wider than it's ever been. Just 23% of AEs are now responsible for 83% of the revenue that their businesses are generating, or their new businesses are being generated. So we know that it can be done because 23% of the AEs are doing it. What are the rest of the team doing is really concerning. And a lot of it is that they're just not strategically thinking. The best performers are spending more of their time with ICP than with just any general inbound lead that comes through. So they're being a lot more picky about the opportunities that they're working on. The very best performers are using a qualification methodology, and they're not leaving discovery until it's been completed. Doesn't seem to make a big difference on the outcome as to which methodology you use. Just if they're saying they're doing it in their heads rather than actually putting it into the system, that doesn't count. It's got to be documented. We're also finding the top performers are more multi-threaded than others. They're engaging with more stakeholders during the sales process, and the amount of engagement they have with the key stakeholders is much, much higher. So it's not unusual that the top performers by the end of the sales cycle have got the key economic buyers on WhatsApp or on messaging services. So they've built such a good rapport with them that they can really engage with them consistently. Because we all know bumps happen in the road, right? And it matters as to how strong that relationship is as you go. Lots of examples of how the top performers are doing better than everybody else. But I think one of the other shocking numbers for us wasn't, it's all well and good that all this activity is actually yielding kind of opportunities being created, but only 30% of opportunities opened are closed won. And the deals that closed lost are spending twice as long in pipe as deals that closed won. So there's massive inefficiencies in the way the sales teams are running. And one of the things we've been focused on a lot for the last 6 months has been around slippage. And we've never seen slippage higher than it is at the moment. So first of all, what do we mean by slippage? Well, once an opportunity gets past the initial discovery phase, usually stage two, you should then have a predictable close date. At which point, if that close date slips by more than 4 weeks, that's considered slippage. We found that 39% of opportunities that made it past stage two slipped by more than 4 weeks. That number's never been that high before. And the worrying thing about that is that once you see that level of slippage, the win rate drops by 47%. It's a huge challenge. If you're seeing slippage in the sales cycle at the moment, the chances are that's going to materially impact your win rates. And so not all deals are equal. Okay, if a deal has momentum and is going through the pipe at pace, that the chance of that closing as a won deal is much, much higher than a deal that slips by more than 4 weeks. So be aware that not every deal is equal. And that's kind of why we need to be more data-driven in which deals are we going to spend time investing in reviewing or being harsher at closing deals off as lost sooner, because we've got to get the salespeople working on opportunities that can actually yield results rather than just padding out the pipeline with deals that aren't real.
Got it. And when you think about the future, think about Ebster's legacy. What impact do you hope that Ebster will have in the sales and marketing technology sector over the coming 5-10 years?
We feel that there's 100,000 businesses that need to adopt some sort of revenue intelligence over the next 3 years. And our peers are absolutely focused on servicing the C-suite. So the ivory tower, here's your forecast, here's the pretty graph as to what number we're going to hit. From our perspective, we want to democratize revenue intelligence. We want it to be available to the masses. So we're working on, I mentioned our call recording tech that pre-populates the MedPIC. We're going to be launching that as a standalone solution so that individuals on the ground can just use it, get value from it. We very much want to keep banging this drum about how companies can be a lot more data-driven. And I suppose our legacy is about helping businesses, helping sales functions in particular, become data-driven and build these predictable revenue engines and do it in a way that actually serves the users on the ground and the managers that have to be responsible for doing the pipeline review and helping them to win more. Because ultimately, that's what we all want, right? We all want to win more.
What's the one piece of advice you'd love to give to aspiring entrepreneurs?
Find the right business partner. I wouldn't be here without Zach. So Zach and I have very different skill sets. Find someone who brings a set of skills to the table that you don't have. There's so much value in being able to lean into someone who, when you're having a bad day, they're having a good one. There is a world of difference in being a one-man band, doing your own thing, and being a partnership. And we were able to scale because we brought different skills to the table, and we just trust each other to work together to achieve our common goals. Be cautious who you choose. You know, Zach and I worked together for 8 years before we went into business together. So find someone that's as good as you are or better in areas of the business that aren't your area of focus. Zach is the clever resource in the business. He's responsible for the product and the development team and pretty much the whole operational side of the business. His skill set and insights have allowed us to pivot and develop world-leading products and punch way above our weight because we do everything in-house and do it our way. So, and more recently, we've extended that out and there's a very talented chap called Daniel Remedios. He's also joined us, who came to us, I think, relatively fresh out of university. He's now been with us 10 years and recently joined the board. Again, an insanely talented individual. I mean, I could go on about the other. We're blessed with an incredibly talented team of people, very driven, very focused. And ultimately, business is all about people. Hire the very best you can. Try and make sure you're bringing in people that are on the upward trajectory, that are curious, that want to learn, and aren't afraid of hard work. Those individuals will as long as they want the same outcome as you, then you'll end up working together to achieve those goals. So yeah, it's all about the people.
And how have you adapted the business during the pandemic in terms of the ongoing debate about work from home, hybrid, 100% office based? How has your business changed over the last 3 to 4 years?
Before the pandemic, we were an office in the West End, and really it was a techie office. It was full of all the techies, the product team, and really the commercial team were almost gate crashing the techies' office. That was always a bit of a challenge, but you know, they had a job to do, and them all being in the office kind of it worked at the time. If I think about it now, the techies really only come in if there's beer on offer. So they sit in their quiet rooms, they're very happy working remotely. They're all on the payroll, they're all London or UK-based resources. And they work very closely together, but they don't tend to come into the office. And now the office is a commercial hub. I'm still quite old school, so I'm in at least 4 days a week. And I try and encourage the team to do the same because ultimately we're trying to change the world and you know, we're still working out the details. So having the team working closely together is really important.
That's great advice. Guy, thanks so much for joining me on this week's episode. Lots of really interesting insights. Good luck with Ebster trying to change the world, and good luck with Tottenham Hotspur as well.
Thank you very much.
This episode of the Startup to Scale Up Game Plan was brought to you by Alpina Search. Head over to www.alpinasearch.com for advice on scaling your technology startup and recruiting high-impact senior talent.